Pratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratipratip स्वयं व्यासेन कृतितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्तधामि भगवद्गीते भगवद्वैषिणी. Chapter 16, verse 24. Tasmat shastram pramanante, tasmat shastram pramanante, karya karya vyavastitau, karya karya vyavastitau, nyatva shastra vidhanoktam, nyatva shastra vidhanoktam. Karma kartum iharhasi, karma kartum iharhasi. Tasmat shastram pramanam te karya akarya yavastitau. Nyatva shastra vidana uktam, karma kartum iha arhasi. Says, summing up everything, he says, tasmat, therefore, the shastra, let the shastra, I mean, let the Vedas, the whole sampradaya, the whole teaching, not just the Vedanta, but the whole karma, the whole understanding of dharma and adharma, as taught so thoroughly in the shastra, okay? Let that be the pramana for you. Let that be the means of knowledge. Pramana means the means of knowledge. Let that be the authority for you. Let that be, let the shastra be the one who gives you clarity in terms of dharma and adharma. So he says, therefore, let the shastra, let the Vedas be the means of knowledge for you, tamings for you. Karya akarya vivastitau, in terms of understanding clearly what is to be done, karya, and what is not to be done. What is dharma? What is adharma? What are the viddhis, the shastric viddhis? The viddhis are those things that should be done, that should be practiced, the things, the injunctions, the things that I should follow. The akarya, the things not to be done, are the nishedha. So you've got viddhi-nishedha. These are two technical terms that are used in the shastra. The viddhis are the injunctions, the things that I'm enjoined to do. The nishedhas are the things I'm asked to avoid because they bring about their adharma. They bring about papakarma. The viddhis are the injunctions, the things that are my duties, and the things which keep me on track, so to speak. They keep me within the realm of dharma. The nishedhas are the things that I should avoid. They take me into adharma. They lead to papa. So punya, dharma, adharma, punya, papa. Dharma are those, we can look at it like this. When we say Ishvara Arpana Buddhi, means for karma yoga, what is karma yoga? Is that my buddhi, my conviction should be viewing the whole creation as a worship of Ishvara. Ishvara Arpana. Everything that I do, every decision I make, every action that I choose to follow should be an Ishvara Arpana Buddhi. Means I should have that conviction that this is a worship of Ishvara. So how do you operationalize that? What does that mean? That every one of my actions be a worship of Ishvara? It's that every one of my actions that I do, that my highest priority is dharma. Because if you look at the whole manifestation, that manifestation of the creation is a manifestation of infinite laws. It's like what Swamiji calls an infinite order. Everything has its order. And that order, if I'm in harmony with that order, I'm in harmony with Ishvara. It's when I'm butting up against that order that I'm making a rub. Bhagavan tells me that by creating some pain. There's nothing more wonderful than pain, in fact. Pain is our greatest teacher. Like, for instance, fire is hot. So if I am functioning well with fire, if my relationship with fire is appropriate, it will be very, very useful for me. It can provide me heat. It can cook. It can cook for me. I can use it to melt metal, etc. I can do so many things are done with fire. It provides great energy. But if I abuse the fire, it can cause so much damage to myself and to others. I can use fire to burn down a house. I can put my hand in fire and burn myself. And so I have that choice. I have that choice to use something or to be in the creation in such a way that it is beneficial, it's useful, it blesses me and it blesses others. Or I can use those laws and those things that exist in a way that causes stress and pain for myself and for others. And so Ishvara Arpana Buddhi means that I am relating to this creation in a way that blesses myself and others. That's Dharma. When I'm pushing up in it toward the creation, toward the laws of the creation, in a way that causes pain for me and, of course, for others. And that's something that we learn, is that when we are causing pain for others, it's both the perpetrator and the victim that are hurt. Right? It's not like the one who is causing the pain is themselves let off from the pain. There's a definite relationship. Just the same, when somebody is giving or causing joy, you also feel joy. If you're loving somebody, you also feel the love. Swamiji once told me that it was such a beautiful example, but he... Not example, it was true. True, actually, it wasn't exactly an example. But what he said was, when he was young, his father died when he was about 8 years old. He was the oldest boy. And so his father died, and so he grew up without a father, and it was kind of a difficult situation. His mom had to handle so many things. And so in some ways, a lot of the love that you would normally get from your father, from your family, he didn't get that. He had aunts and uncles and people that would step in and help. But he didn't really get all of the things that you would expect to get, right? That your heart would want to get. But what he discovered, even before knowledge, when he was a young man, one thing he discovered was that you get it, that very thing that you want to get from the other, you actually get it by giving it. What you want from the other, to receive from the other, by giving that very thing, you yourself get it. And that was a very big insight for him, because he realized this, and then he's passed it on to us. It's something I've realized also, and I think it's one of the most valuable things. You don't have control over what other people give you. You don't have control. You can't make other people love you. You can't make them be kind to you. They may be. They may love you. They may be kind to you. But they may not be. You can't control that. But you can have what you want from the other by giving it. By giving that very thing. And so that really is the crux of Dharma. That's such a huge understanding. Is that what it is that you're seeking, you give that and then you'll have it. What you really want, you give that, and then you'll have it. We don't know that. That takes some maturity. It takes maturity to actually really understand that to the point of putting it into practice. Because what will happen is that we want these things, we want to receive these things, and then when we don't receive them, then we react and we become hurt and we become angry. And so we're actually giving back exactly the opposite of what we want to receive, and then we get into kind of a vicious cycle. That's what's normal, right? We feel hurt, and then we react, and then that becomes the reality that we're living in. So it takes a lot of kind of understanding and maturity, and of course Vedanta is so helpful in this, because with Vedanta you recognize that the source of the love anyway has nothing to do with Maya. It has nothing to do with out here. The source of the wholeness, the source of the fullness is my own being. And my mind is actually never, ever away from that. So that is the truth. That's the ultimate truth. And the mind ultimately recognizes that, that the very ananda, the love, the wholeness I seek is my own nature. And so my mind more and more turns toward just being with my own being. But before it can really do that, it has to work out all of these problems, these reactions, these hurts and pains that we've acquired and gained just from our upbringing. Because this person has hurt me, and this person has hurt me, and this person has hurt me. This person has done this, this person has done that. And so instead of realizing that actually what I want from that person, I can have by giving it. Not just to that person, but to all beings. The very thing that I'm needing, I can get by giving it. That's a huge thing to realize. That's what I don't realize. That what I do is give back the hurt, give back the anger, strike out, and dig myself deeper and deeper and deeper into the pit of suffering. Right? And so there's a lot of unwinding that has to take place. So in order for me to unwind and learn how to be with all of the, how to respond to the world, I have to learn how to respond to the world much differently, where I'm allow you to be as you are, and I'm not really, I can keep you outside and give you the space to be as you are, and I can respond to you from my own self, not as a reaction to you. That's just a beautiful thing. Swamiji is always saying, just give people their space. Keep them outside. Give them their space. I've said this so many times, I never could figure out, what does he mean, keep them outside? Keep these people outside. What does it mean? How do you keep them outside? What does that mean? Well, when you are reacting, when you have a reaction against a person, they are now inside. Right? You're carrying them around with you. They can be off walking around and doing their own thing, but you are carrying that person, that dyad, inside of you. So now they've entered. And now they're living there inside of you, and you and that person are walking around together, you're sleeping together, you're with them, could be even with them 24 hours, day after day after day. That person is just there lodged in a dyadic relation. It means you and that person are there internalized. So the fact is that the relationships that we have normally, or what is going on, is that they're internalized relationships. We have objective relationships with people outside. The people are outside. Then I can deal with you and do what is ever appropriate. You're outside. You have your own space. You are who you are, and I can be with you. I can welcome you. You're what you are. That's not hurting me. I can love you. I can support you. I can help you if I can be of help. That's fine. In fact, you are that way toward most people. In the world, there's how many people in the world are you? How many people in the world do you know? Most people you have that freedom with. But there are a handful that you don't have that freedom with, and those people are inside. And so when we do these type of meditations, like welcoming meditations, you're really welcoming the person who you're carrying around inside. Right? And you're trying to totally change that structure of those inner relationships that you have. Because the mind is used to being totally knotted around those particular relationships. There's a lot of stress and hurt and pain that you're carrying around these various relationships, whatever they may be. Everybody has their own set. You know? If you have no problem, then your heart's as big as Ishvara. You're welcoming the whole everybody. Nobody's a problem. That's Bhagavan. Then you don't have a problem. That's Antakarana Shuddhi. I mean, your mind's free. Nobody, everybody is welcome. Somebody comes in the room, it's fine. They're here. There's nobody pushing away. That's a beautiful freedom. But we don't start out with that freedom. We don't start there. Because we're we've had lifetimes of samsara, you know. Lifetimes of projecting my ananda onto others and having others not being able to give me, you know, to give me what I've asked of them. Or to abuse me in this way or hurt me in that way. So all we have to unwind all of this. So now, there's a couple of layers here. One is where Shankara says, he says, view, take the, what the Shastra says as pramana. Understand dharma, a dharma. Don't get yourself into a dharma because it causes so much pain. Understand that. Understand the pain that a dharma causes. Don't do it. The Shastra teaches this so clearly. Confine your behavior to dharma. Stay away from a dharma. He makes that clear. That gives itself gives a lot of freedom to the buddhi, right? Because to the degree that you practice that, to that degree your mind has freedom. But we also have to know how to handle the hurts and pains that have come our way. You know, when somebody's cruel to me, when somebody's abusive to me, when somebody's mean to me, that's a little harder. So how to handle that? How to be with that? How to be dharmic? How to not give that back? I used to feel that Bhagavan would make me so mad. He would make me so angry because a person could be, say, do a wrong to me. I would consider that they had done a great wrong to me. It hurt me, you know. But if I retaliated in any way, then that doesn't work. It doesn't work to retaliate. Unless you're retaliating, and we wouldn't use that word, if your behavior to them, if you receive their hurt and respond back to them in a way that is dharma, you know, then you're fine. But if it's an eye for an eye, if you react in kind, they hit you, you hit them back, you know, then you suffer the very adharma that they're suffering. You're suffering the papa, you're suffering the reaction, you're suffering the constriction of that adharmic act. And so they started it. They started it. You should be able to defend yourself. But if you defend yourself, then you suffer the same adharma that they're suffering. It does not work. And I used to see this. It used to really be so irritating to me. Because then you have to find another way. You have to find the appropriate way to handle these things that are as though coming at you. And that way is not to strike back in the same so-called adharmic way that they were coming at you. You have to learn how to do that because adharma is adharma. Whether the adharma is coming towards you or you're sending it back, adharma is adharma and it causes the hurt. Yeah, it causes hurt in you by the very fact that it's a dharma. So that's a good, it's hard, it's a good lesson to learn. We learn it over and over and over again. And sometimes, you know, our minds are complex. And so you can even have feelings like, I don't care if I suffer or not. It's worth it for me to get back at that person.
Yeah.
But there comes a time, honestly, when you figure it out, these all of these dynamics out, and it isn't worth it. What is worth it is your shanti. What is worth it is your love, your ananda, having that wholeness, having that fullness. And so the mind slowly but surely starts giving up this retaliatory type of response, because you've learned that it's not worth it, you know, and you learn how to deal with the situation. Say if you look at in terms of physical things, fire is such a wonderful thing. Say the fire burns you, and now you hate fire. It burns you. It's burnt you. So I'm going to do everything I can to just destroy that fire. I'm never letting this fire in the house. Because look at what it did to me. But there's another way. The other way is to learn what fire can do and to handle it properly. And if you handle it properly, then that fire becomes a gift, becomes something beautiful, something valuable. The fire is a beautiful example because it's so extreme. It's such an extreme gift, right? It's such a beautiful, extreme, powerful gift. And it is so dangerous also. It's so painful. It's so hurtful. It's so dangerous. I think people are like that. People have a huge range of being so loving, so helpful, so kind, so appreciative, so grateful, so giving, so compassionate. They have this beautiful range of goodness. And they're also capable of extreme cruelty and extreme hatred and extreme violence and viciousness. They have this other side. The universe is like that. Dharma, beauty, love, incredible, overwhelming majesty. And it has this other very violent side. You know? And so what side do you want to live in? You know? What side do you want to attract? And so just as a human being, I'm not talking even about Brahman here, I'm talking really about Ishvara. As a human being, you want to attract love and beauty and care and dharma, you know. But to do that, that's what you have to give. That's it. To attract that, you have to give that. To enjoy that, you have to give it. You know. And so that becomes, just in terms of dharma, adharma, that's our sadhana. The shastra, the Vedas, they make it so clear what is to be done, what is not to be done. Himsam nakuryat. One should not cause suffering. One should not cause, kuryat is the potential. One should not cause suffering. Ahimsa in dharma, ahimsa is at the top. Non-injury. Do not cause suffering. In the sannyasa vow that all of the sannyasis take is the vow of abhayam. Goes like this: let no being be afraid of me, and let me not fear any being. If I fear a being, then when they're coming at me, I'm coming back at them because I'm giving back the same. I'm reacting in that way. So abhyam, let no being be afraid of me, and let me not be afraid of any being. So that abhyam, or ahimsa, that can actually be like a mantra, like a daily sadhana or daily meditation. If you think about what do I want to be? What do I want my mind? What type of mind do I want to have? What type of values do I want to have? Because we have to practice them in a way, because we're conditioned to all other ways of being. So it's not just a practice, it's a practice based upon your knowledge, based upon your understanding. And so say, I take that hymn, Psalm Nakuriya, let me not cause suffering for another being. What if that's my value? That's a very pervasive, it covers everything. And the next one was very powerful, that one. Because that's the sadhana, that's the basic dharma. And in terms of a sadhana, one that's maybe one of the very most powerful is what we call vaktapas. Remember the vaktapas? Means let everything I say be true. I don't have to say everything. But what I do say, you have control. You don't have to say everything. But let what you do say be satyam. Let it be true. And let it also be, if you say it, it has to be true, but it should also be useful. It should be something that's beneficial. And If it's true and beneficial, that's still not enough. It should also be prem. It should all be gentle. It should be loving. It should be kind. Otherwise, don't say it. You don't have to say it. The only people that have a right to take away a little bit of that prem are your parents. Your parents and your guru. You know. You're born into their parent. That's their duty, you know. Is to not, they're not always going to make you happy. But they do that because they love you. And your guru is always going to be honest with you. Now you might not always like what you hear, but then you have given them that status of being your teacher. That's another important thing to remember. A guru or a teacher is only a teacher because you have given them that relationship. For you, they are your teacher. There's nobody walking around as a teacher, you know. So somebody says, okay, I'm a teacher. You see, you've come along, okay, well, I'm your teacher. Well, that just isn't true. That's a mutual relationship. But if the student accepts the teacher as a teacher, then in that relationship, they expect honesty. And I'm talking about cruelty, but they would say things that in a regular non-intimate relationship, or you're out of line to be saying these type of things. It's out of line. It's not your business. They're not asking you to make comments about them doing this or that. So that's a beautiful, that vaktapas, if you can get control over your speech, everything else will follow. Because the speech is the first thing out of your mouth. It's the speech comes even before your action often. And so if you have control over the speech, then you have some room, you know, to think about what you're going to do. So he's telling, he's wrapping up this whole chapter that has been on asuric behavior. All of the things that we don't want. And so he says, you know, take the Shastra as a pramana to understand dharma and adharma, what should be done, what should not be done. And then he says, nyatwa, having known that, he says, having understood that, it's not just memorization. It's something you need to think about. You have to work it through and see what's to your advantage and what's not to your advantage. Dharma is to your advantage. Adharma is not to your advantage. We'll see that in a minute. He says, nyatwa, shastra vidana uptam karma. He says, having understood the shruti, having understood those karmas which are enjoined, which are told in the shastra vidana, the duties, those things, those karmas which are enjoined. Shastra vidana means they're enjoined by the shastra. All of these karmas that are told as injunctions, these are the things you should do. It says, kartum iha arhasi. You are qualified here in this world to do those karmas. Those are the karmas that it's okay for you to do. The karmas that fall under the actions, the behavior that falls under the scope of dharma. Here, iha means here. In this world. Why he says this? In this world, in this loka, this particular loka, this loka is a karma bhumi. Which what that means is there's all the seven lokas up and seven lokas down, something like that. Those are all bhoga bhumis. You're not accruing karma in those lokas, in those worlds, up and down. You're just experiencing the results of karma, your punya and papa you're experiencing. In this loka, in this bhuloka, this earth loka where we are now, this is a karma bhumi. Karma bhumi means in this world, you are a karta. Karta means that you are a doer of action. You are accruing punya and papa by your actions. So when that's the case, it's not just about enjoyments. You have choice. You have choices. And so if you have choices in terms of acting, you can act for dharma or adharma. And that means you're going to be in, from this bhumi, this world, you're going to be reaping the results of dharma and adharma. It's going to affect the shanti that you have now, here and now, and it will affect the type of births you get in previous in your next life. Mm-hmm. And so your behavior here, you know, you need to be conscious of what you're doing. How to know? Well, follow the shastra. Follow the shastra. It lays out clearly what is dharma and adharma. But as we see from before, dharma and adharma is also, you know, innate. The shastra spells it out, but it's innate. You know what's dharma and adharma, do unto others as you would have done to yourself. What you don't want done to you, don't do to anybody else. We know this. People know, even Swamiji talks about this in the chapter 17, as we'll be going into. If you steal from somebody, right, you don't want somebody to steal for you, you know that. You don't want anybody stealing from you. That's a given. Okay. But then, you will steal from somebody else, perhaps. But you'll do it stealthily. Because you know that it's wrong. And you know that if you got caught, you would be in trouble. And you know if you got caught, that other person wouldn't like it. But you want what they have. And so you'll override dharma because you want what they have more, right, than your understanding of dharma. So you know it's not right. You know it's adharmic, but you haven't realized the consequences of doing that action. All you know is that you'll get that money. You'll get that money. And you know that you'll like to have that money. You haven't figured out, you haven't realized the laws of dharma and adharma and how really that's going to affect your shanti, your peace, and your sense of well-being. You don't even care about that. You want this so much more. And so you're even willing, this is something, it's so interesting, you're willing to put up with the agitation and the worry, you know, and the stress so that you can have that money. It's, you feel, I don't care about all the pain and the stress and everything that it causes because this money will give me something that I want. We will even feel, say if I'm very angry, somebody's done something very angry, I'm very angry, and so I feel justified because my anger to strike that person, to hit that person, or to burn that person's house down, whatever it is, you know, to cause damage to them in some way. I feel justified to do that, even though I may know that that will make things worse for me. I don't care. I don't care because I want the satisfaction of hurting that person. Right? So that means I have not done I don't have the viveka, the dharma, adharma viveka, to understand what we mean by this. I can have atma and atma viveka, right? This is what we usually say. The differentiation between myself and the things, the different, and my body, my mind, my sense organs, I've differentiated myself from that. We know that. That's a whole Vedanta teaching. We keep going through it. But sometimes we don't really know what we mean by dharma, adharma, viveka. The discrimination between what is dharma and what is adharma. We only have a partial viveka there. It's like this. Stealing. I know that stealing is wrong because I wouldn't want anybody to steal from me. I know that it's wrong. So I have viveka. I know stealing is wrong because I don't want to be stolen from. Then you say, but why do I steal then? Why do I steal? Because I don't have viveka. I only have partial viveka. I know that it's wrong, but I want that money and I would really enjoy having that money. You know, and so even though it's wrong, still I can get away with it and I can get the money. So I do it stealthily, right? So I know that it's wrong, you know, I know I can be punished for it, but if I can get away with it, I'll really enjoy that money and I think I can get away with it.
What about hurting the other?
So we don't have the viveka. There's not really a viveka. No. I can put aside hurting the other because I want the money. I can put blinders on all of that. But I don't realize what it will do to me. What it will do to my Shanti. I haven't realized the difference. And this is a big thing, actually. I haven't realized the difference between having a mind that has Shanti and a mind that doesn't. Because I get acclimatized to a mind that doesn't have Shanti. And so then I keep trying to grasp, fulfill my desires to get a moment of Shanti, just that little moment that the fulfillment of desire has. But I haven't realized at all the natural abiding mind of a mind that has Dharma. I haven't realized that. And because I haven't realized that, the difference between Dharma and Adharma in terms of the natural Shanti that I have, I do not have Dharma, Adharma, Viveka. See what I mean? The Viveka is not there. I know this is Dharma, this is Adharma. I'm supposed to do this, I'm not supposed to do that. I know all of this is should and this is shouldn't. I know that. There's no Viveka in terms of the reward of Dharma and Adharma. There's no Viveka in terms of the Shanti. Even in terms of hurting another, I get release some energy and some stress by giving the other a good boot. You know? And so there's some release in that, but there's no release in terms of the mental peace. There's only mental pain. I'm creating more and more and more of mental pain. So no viveka. There's no viveka here. There's viveka when I realize that when I hurt the other, I hurt myself. Then there's some viveka. When I love the other, then myself enjoys love. When I hate the other, myself enjoys hate. Self means my mind, right? That's the viveka. Then I understand. Until then, I don't really understand. That's why Swamiji's book, Value of Values, is so good. His book, Value of Values, what that does is make, if a person really studies that book, all of the values that is talked about in chapter 13 of the Gita, one by one he goes through that. What happens is I start realizing why it is in my best interests to follow Dharma. Because these pleasures or these securities that are out here, if I'm getting them in any type of adharmic way, there's no joy inside. There's no ananda inside. There's no peace. There's no shanti. There's no feeling of being loved, you know, of being cared. Those are all wiped out. And so he says he ends this chapter, and we're going to go into chapter 17. I'll do that next class. Have Dharma be foremost for you. Don't get into this kama, krodha, lobha. The kama, krodha, lobha. Kama is where what becomes dominant for me is my desire. That's what's important. Fulfilling my desires are what is important. And then krodha is the anger that I have and use when I'm not able to fulfill my desires. Then my anger for me is justified. Let me knock off that person who's getting in my way. I feel justified. And then the lobha, the greed, let me continue to fulfill my desires, fulfill my desires, fulfill my desires. That's asura. That's the asura. The sattvaki, the one who is the daivam, the one who has this daivi sampat, it really is not about kama. My life is not about kama. The life is about dharma. What is the highest value is dharma. Dharma is Ishwara. So that Ishwara Arpana Buddhi, where what is the highest value for me is Dharma. If it's not Dharma, it's moksha. For the highest value to be moksha, already your highest value is Dharma. And your highest value is Dharma, then what happens is that Dharma becomes eventually at the right time the mumukshu. The Dharma transforms into the mumukshutvam because there's space. There's space inside for me to want to know Bhagavan. Who are you really? Who am I really? What is all of this? What is the truth of all of this? The Dharmi becomes the mumukshu. The adharmi becomes a dharmi eventually. At some point, the dharmi becomes a dharmi, and the dharmi becomes a mumukshu. That's the path. That's why this karma yoga buddhi, this Ishvara Arpana buddhi, this following the shastra, you know, seeing the creation as Ishvara, you know, giving to others what I want. That golden rule is so beautiful, you know. If you look at it as the most positive way to say it is, give to others what I want and don't give to others what I don't want. Do unto others as you would have done to yourself means give to others what I would want. Do to others what I would want and don't do to others what I wouldn't want. That is such a simple rule. That's a guiding rule. It's there. It's so beautiful. It's there in all of the different religions. It's there in India also. As the ahimsa, then golden rule. That's the Dharma. That's enough. The rest of it we can figure out. If that's what we're following, everything else will come naturally. And so he reminds Arjuna, understand this Dharma, Adharma, Viveka. Understand what the Shastra says. It's not just look, you learn it, you understand it. Jnatva means to know, means you understand. So knowing that, then here in this world, in this loka, we are, then you do those karmas, which are enjoined by the Shastra. What is enjoined by the Shastra? Ahimsa. Do not hurt others. Golden rule. Do unto others as you would have done to yourself. Don't do to others as you would do to yourself. And underneath that are all the specific instances. Specific instances that fall under that. So understanding that here in this world, it's not just a bhoga bhumi where you're just enjoying. Like a dream world is a bhoga bhumi. Here you have choice. And so it's important for you to really understand, you know, Dharma and the repercussions of Dharma and Adharma in terms of your own well-being for those to be your highest value. If Dharma and Adharma isn't understood in reference to your own well-being, then you will steal the money. Because the money's more valuable because you don't understand Dharma Adharma. You understand you could use the money. Okay. I'm going to stop there. Tia B, you've come just in time. Swasti prajabhya paripalayantam nyayena margena mahim maheshaha go brahmane vyashitamastu nityam loka samasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshati parajanyah prithivi sasya shalini desho yamksho parahitah Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha. Sarve pantrani pashyantu. Ma kaschit dukkha bhag bhavet. Asato ma sadgamaya. Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya. Mrityorma amritam gamaya. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om. Okay, everybody, I'm going to be sending out an email, and we won't have class on Saturday. I'm going to be up at the farm. I will have class, some class. It won't be the Mandukya, but it will be a class on Sunday night, online only. So please come online and we'll have a nice class. Not sure what it'll be, but we will have a class. Okay? Good. I have to send out the email. I'll send it out tonight.
Yeah. You know, sounds like such a judgment on me, you know, when you become a dharmic and you should have known better.
Well,
you know?
Yeah,
and,
but
and it's like, yeah, yeah. I know, but it's like, and it's a fine line to be clear about, you know, that you don't want to become a dharmic towards yourself because you've been a dharmic.
Yeah.
Right? And how to keep that clear, you know, and not fall into judgment. That you have failed and you have sinned, which is a Christian thing, obviously. Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, of course.
Oh, okay.
You know, Krishna has that beautiful verse, I think it's in chapter 2. I'll find it in that. And Shankara does a commentary on it. He says something like, you know, he talks about this, the Karma Yoga Buddhi, part of the Karma Yoga Buddhi is that Samatva Buddhi, where in victories and defeats, you remain the same. You know? And then so Shankara talks about this. Yes, and when things go your way, you have that steadiness of yourself. When you're victorious and also when you're defeated in something. Then Shankara says, yes, and you have to have that samatva even in reference to when your mind is not being that way. In other words, your mind is not being victorious in terms of the way it wants to be. You have to have a samatva, that sameness buddhi, toward that also.
So when you lose your steadiness,
yes,
still.
Because you're thinking, say you have this value, oh, I should be like this. I should always be like this. When I'm victorious, you know, I should be the same, and when I'm defeated, I should be the same out of here. So I have that samatva buddhi. That's my value. You know, of being
equalness.
Yeah, that equalness.
Right.
That's my value. But then something happens, you know, I lose something, I'm defeated in something, and then I get all upset.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then, okay, so now I haven't had that summit to a buddhi,
mm-hmm.
right? I haven't been able to do that. And so now I get mad.
For losing it.
At that. So now it's an infinite regress. Mm-hmm. Right? I lost the summit to a buddhi in reference to this defeat. And now I've lost the samatva buddhi in reference to my loss of the samatva buddhi for that defeat. You see what I mean?
Mm.
So Bhagavan says, Arjuna says, and you have to have that samatva buddhi when you can't do that. When you find you can't have the samatva buddhi,
yeah,
you have to have a samatva buddhi toward that defeat.
Yeah.
And so in a way, and all through the Gita, it says you have to be able to pick yourself up. When you fall down, then you pick yourself up. like with a child. Swamiji uses the example, little child learning how to walk, it keeps falling down on its bottom, you know? And then the parents will just, you know, pick it up and be delighted that now it's getting up and it's walking again.
So you shouldn't be disappointed when you fall down then?
No, they were falling down all the time. So you fell down, you just pick up and you go. Go try again. And giving, having that love.
That's where the welcoming it could come in also.
Mm, yeah. And saying, it's okay, we'll do it next time. Otherwise, we would be devastated.
Yeah.
You know, because we make mistakes.
I'll never be pure.
Yeah. The only one really, really pure is Brahman, is your being. Everything else is, you know, doing this and doing that, making this mistake, making that mistake. But the buddhi can be kind. And then there's no problem. You know, if you think that you're supposed to, every behavior, everything you do is supposed to be perfect, that is not true. You know, but your attitude can be one that is very stable, is very loving and helpful. And then the thing is, if you can be that way toward yourself, and if you make a mistake, then you help. You can be that way toward others. Otherwise, others don't get any slack. Like, oh, look at this mistake you made, and you made this mistake. Yeah. So you become, if you're punishing to yourself, you're punishing to others. Because you can't help it, because you're a punisher. So, you're a punisher, yeah, you're a punisher. So you have to find the person inside that can also be with the one who's punishing and say, you know, you don't have to be punishing. Some of that's the way we're brought up, you know, because you can have the punishing father, the punishing mother. So you can find that in yourself there's a punisher. And so then you have to come into that punisher. That punisher is 3 or 4 years old probably. At what age were you when the punisher was internalized?
The nuns.
Yeah, the nuns. So now you, the adult, has to come in and say, hey, you don't have to be punishing, it's okay. You were brought up that way, that's how they treated you. But you know what, I'll take care of it from now on. You don't have to have that job anymore. You have to release those introjects of those jobs. The punishing job. The critic. Because you could have grown up with a critical, angry father or mother or nuns.
It's not just critic, it's also this... wanting to evaluate all the time, you know, your progress and your growth and that kind of, that's outside of being just a critic. I mean, you know, even that dynamic constricts you.
It does. Like, say you're trying to, like, say you want to become an expert in something. So you have that kind of buddhi, you want to become an expert in something, and you have an idea of what that means. And then you're evaluating yourself. I think, I don't know, I was going to say, I think maybe men do that more than women. I know, maybe that's not true.
We compete.
it's a competitive, you know, I need to make this, and then you can evaluate yourself along the way. But it doesn't have to be in the physical realm, it can be in terms of your own qualities or your own shanti or evaluating yourself as you're becoming a more peaceful person or a less reactive person. And so now we have this evaluation. Oh, look at me. I should be here by now. I'm only here. I should be here. Oh, this is all awful.
Yeah.
Measuring.
You know, measuring.
And then that's when you have to find the kind person inside and say, you know, there's no time here. It's not a race against time. The psyche has its own time. And as long as that you're there supporting it, you have to let the flower unfold. That's how Swamiji will say. He uses that example. Like if you have a little rosebud, and you say you give the rosebud to a child, and the child says, oh, Mommy, I want to see the flower. I want to see it blossom. I want to see it blossom, but I can't wait. And so it starts pulling the little petals, you know. And you got this poor mangled little rosebud, because it couldn't wait for it to just blossom. We have to provide the love and support and guidance, you know, bringing our knowledge and our understanding of how to be with the mind and all of that. You have to bring it there in a loving way and let the psyche unfold. It knows what to do. You have to have some trust, too, in letting the psyche heal itself, just like the body knows what to do. It'll heal itself to the best of its ability.
So if you give it time and environment, it'll heal by itself?
It'll heal.
It'll heal.
You give it the love and the support, and then let it work out what it needs to work out.
Mm-hmm.
You get the love and support, and you have the knowledge to be able to deal with its complexes and hurts. That knowledge is important. Because otherwise you're re-damaging yourself. Like, for instance, that's why there's a lot of psychology. I mean, we're adding to Vedanta now a lot of psychology because we need to.
Yeah.
You know? But when you have little hurt little ones inside, complexes inside, and what can happen unless you're trained, unless you understand, you say there's a hurt little child inside, and the reason that hurt little child is there is because there was a mean father that was screaming at him. It could be any combination of things, but I'm just saying, say it was at a mean father who was always screaming and criticizing and screaming and criticizing. And so when that little child inside comes up, what can come up for you is the other half of the dyad, which is the mean father screaming at it. So then the adult identifies with the mean father and starts screaming at the little child again.
Do the same thing.
Re-traumatizing. So it takes some learning and consciousness to realize that dyad and to be able to go in and be with both sides of the dyad. The hurt child, you be the good parent to the hurt child, and you also understand that hurt little child had introjected the mean father at the same time. You interject the whole scene. The father and the child, or the mother and the child, whoever it may be, both gets interjected. And so then you have to talk to the little one inside who interjected the father when she was 3 years old, or he was 3 years old. And so you have to tell that one it can give up that now.
Well, and those interjects, there's also the positive side, one of caring or looking after.
Those interjects are not a problem. Those that give the healthy psyche.
Mm.
You know? But it's the ones that were missing that then you, the adult, have to go in and help. You know? And so now you start relating to those internal messages in a much, much different way that is actually healing. Otherwise, it's just an unconscious process that keeps going on and on and on endlessly. But once you know how to be with it, things actually start changing. And that's why when we use the words like inner friend, be an inner friend, like when some hurt is coming up, to instead of being a critical voice, you know, being an inner friend. If a critical voice comes up, be an inner friend to that too. Say, you don't have to be critical anymore. It's not necessary. You know, so that the final voice, the innermost voice, is that inner friend. And then that psyche can change and mature, you know. And simple things like what we were talking a little bit today, like giving what you want to receive, though, that's what you give. You know, how you want to be treated, that's how you consciously treat others, you know.
Could you talk a little more about that? And give some examples, that giving what it is that you want. And how, trying to also understand how does that work? Because, I'm attracted to this idea,
yeah.
But I'm also skeptical at the same time.
Yeah.
And I want to understand it better.
Just kind of the generic best way, I think, to understand is, say you really wish that someone really loved you. Doesn't matter who it is. Somebody really loved you so that you would, could feel loved. You wish you had somebody who really loved you so that you could feel loved. Okay, that's very normal. Okay, but you don't have that person. So then how am I ever going to feel loved? Because I don't have that person to really love me, so how will I feel loved? All you have to do is to love. To feel loved, you have to love. You don't need somebody else. In fact, somebody else can be loving you, but unless you love, you're not going to feel it. So really, what you have control, what you want is to feel loved. Okay? If you really want to feel loved, then you love. You love people. You do things, you give to people, you do things to make people happy, you love people. And then you will feel loved. But we think that the only way I can feel loved is somebody out there's got to love me, right? Then I'll feel loved. But that isn't true. In fact, people out there can love you and you don't necessarily feel loved. But, and you don't have control over it either. You don't have control. You want people to love you. Well, Bhagavan, please send me somebody to love me. You know,
or maybe you want that certain person.
Yeah. Or
who isn't interested.
Who isn't interested. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so you don't really have control. There can be so much karma in that. You don't really have control. Mm-hmm. But you have so much more control over your loving.
Well, then why do you hesitate? You know, you hesitate. That takes an effort or a...
It takes an effort and you haven't figured it out. Mm. You know, you haven't figured it out to the point of having a real value. Because it does take some energy, especially when you're not used to it.
Yeah.
You're not used to the act of giving, the act of loving.
And it makes you vulnerable. I mean, if you make that your kind of core of your personality...
It doesn't really make you vulnerable unless you're talking about falling in love with somebody.
No.
Falling in love, that whole love thing is vulnerable. But I'm talking about just loving. That's not vulnerable. What's vulnerable about it?
Well, it's scary to be open... to others. I mean, you don't know if you're going to get attacked or whether they're going to scratch you.
Yeah, but you don't have to. You don't have to. Maybe you're thinking about becoming intimate. I'm thinking about simply caring, simply giving.
Yeah, right. I don't have a problem when, like, for instance, the people that I take care of sometimes, right? They're in need.
Yeah.
It's very obvious that they depend on you. So I have no problem being kind and caring and loving.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So maybe that's, you practice in small places and then maybe eventually you do it with strangers. I don't know.
Actually, that's good. You keep doing as you can, and then your capacity increases.
You cultivate it, basically.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking about... Well, let me see. I'll use Swamiji again. Swamiji is very, very loving. He's very giving, very open, very generous. But he's not intrusive. He's not asking anything of you. He just is open and loving and caring, and if there's something that he can do for you, he certainly will. If he can possibly do it, he will. You know, it may be beyond what he can do, but if he can do it, he will, and he wants to. So he's very loving and generous and giving in that way, but there's nothing intrusive about it that would make feel somebody want to attack him. And if they're going to attack him, that's for something that they're carrying, some kind of problem that they have, but it's not, and I'm not talking about anything intrusive. I'm talking about a welcoming, an openness, a wanting to help, and being willing to help if you can, because you care. And having and practicing that. I don't see Swamiji practicing it. He just is that. But he probably was practicing at some point. You know? He's not practicing now. He's that way. He is that, you know. And we are that way to whatever degree we are, and to whatever degree we aren't, we're practicing it, or we're not practicing it. But if we are practicing it, then your heart gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and the reason it gets bigger is because it's so rewarding. You know, it's not that it's not rewarding.
It's like a feedback loop.
It's a positive feedback loop, because you get the love that you give. Not that you're getting it from the other person.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that, oh, if you give love to that person, they will give it back. I'm not saying that at all. It's that you want to feel loved. And when you want to feel loved, I'm not saying that that means it's going to come from out here. It's by your giving love that you feel loved, because your mind is in the state that allows yourself to reflect in that mind in the way that the mind feels loved. Because the very swarupa, the very nature of the self is loved. The self is a completed state. The self isn't performing a karma, an act of loving. It is loved. And so when the mind is not rejecting anything, is not contributing anything, when you're in the presence of somebody who's not filtering that loved, then in their presence you feel loved, because what's radiating is lovedness. That's the very nature of the self. And so when your mind is quiet and enjoys shanti, it feels loved because the self is loved.
So it's actually locating the source of...
The source of lovedness is the self.
So it's
your being.
Yeah, so the process of being loving helps to stay with the loved.
Yes, because the mind has shanti. It's a welcoming mind, has no resistance. There's a dvaita there. There's no subject object. There's no pushing away. There's only Ishwara there. There's no jiva coming in and trying to, you know, make separation. That's why they're welcoming. We all love them, welcoming type of meditations, because you get rid of any duality, subject object. It's gone.
So when you say the what you want part that you give, it's what you get isn't the object that you're fixating on. It's what...
It's the loved experience.
And that would apply to other things besides love, right? Like artists, say you're someone who's like, I'm going through some challenges financially and so on. So security, you know, basic securities are an issue sometimes. And... I'm just wondering, how would it work with that?
Well,
it seems like it would, right?
Well, what would work is not that. I mean, I just believe from the Vedanta that, I mean, you get what you need because you're here, and so the basic securities are taken care of by Ishwara. But the feeling of being secure, that feeling is the nature of the self, and so this does. Feeling secure, that feeling of stability, of secure, of being whole, of being complete, that's the very nature of the self.
What would you give to get that? And does it work that way?
Yeah, I mean, it's a question of, no, the bigger question is, if it's absent, what that sense of security, what does that mean to, where's the mistake in that respect?
When that sense of security is there?
Absent.
Is absent?
You know, there must be a flaw if you know what the source of security is, and yet there's a sense of it not being there. I mean...
I don't think what's going to give you the sense of security is... Maybe. You can say, well, what would really make me feel secure is if a big fat check came. Okay. I mean,
sure seems that way.
Yeah, yes. That would make me feel secure temporarily until I ran out again, right? And then I need something else to come.
No, well, you need a fat check that takes you all the way down the line.
Continual fat checks.
Yeah.
Annuities.
Okay.
Oh, is that what they are?
But in the end, that's all samsara, okay? So
what really gives you the sense of security? One thing is that your self is changeless and its nature is secure. But the other, from the standpoint of the jiva,
mm-hmm.
is Ishwara. And that recognition of Ishwara then gives
so
you security.
Ishwara arpana buddhi. That if well, whatever happens, so whatever is, even if my worst fears come true, that's
mm-hmm.
what's...
That's Ishwara.
That's Ishwara.
And that kind of security doesn't seem to have anything to do with dharma, or it lies outside of dharma. I mean,
why? What lies outside of dharma? Ishwara never lies outside of dharma. Ishwara is dharma. How does it lie?
Producing a sense of security. I mean, I can be a really good guy and then still feel as insecure as anything. You know?
Yeah, but again, you're defining. I'm starting to wear out a little
okay,
bit. But no, let me talk a little bit more.
I'll end it.
No, it's a very good question. I just don't know if I can do all the roundabout to solve the problem right now.
We want instant solutions.
No. Let me just think about it for a minute. You've decided, you know, what it is that would make you feel secure. You already have it in your mind. For me to feel secure, I need this, and this. Right? So that's the jiva.
Yeah.
Now Ishwara has to go along with what you say is going to make you feel secure. But it may not be Ishwara's plan. Right? That might not be what's in store for you. So sometimes it helps to look in hindsight that you get what you need all the way through. It's not always what you want, but you are taken care of and you do get what you need from birth through to death. And so moment by moment by moment, you are with your life, you're handling it, it's fine. And that'll be all the way through. You might not like your situation, but it is your situation and you handle it. Okay?
Mm.
The problem is that you worry about getting a situation that will do what? What's the situation going to do? When you're in that situation, you'll handle it. The situation is Ishwara. And your body, mind, sense, circuits are part of Ishwara, and here you are in the situation. You will always be in a situation. Always. You know? And you have to live in that situation and deal with it. That's Bhagavan. You'll never be, there's no outside. So you're always in the situation, and yourself is always there as the very being. Yourself is always secure. It's never not secure. The self is... This whole universe has the most secure self. You know? And so, and this is your prarabdha from birth to death. So if you accept your prarabdha, then, I mean, a jnani just lets the prarabdha unfold. Let's Ishwara take care of it.
So that's the driver of the life.
The driver of the life is my own knowledge and letting Ishwara be Ishwara. And Ishwara includes this jiva in this life. So that requires some shraddha. It requires not only shraddha, though, but also analysis of your own experience. You know?
What kind of analysis?
Analysis of your experience, like looking backwards. It helps to look backwards, because you can have...
Like Schopenhauer's quote.
Oh, what is it?
I don't remember the exact quote, but I can paraphrase it. It's something like, while you're going through it, life seems like a series of obstacles and missteps and messy and so on. But when you look back on it, it's this beautiful symphony of
a meaningfulness.
Everything. Yeah, and it brings you through to whatever.
Exactly. That's what you look back and it all makes sense. But we're afraid to look forward. We bring that same knowledge forward. And so with your knowledge, with your Vedanta, with also looking in hindsight, you know, learn how to trust. Learn how to relax into Bhagavan. Yeah.
We can keep developing that.
We'll keep developing it. We'll talk. It's a good question. I mean, we have to spend time on it.
Okay.
It's just my mind is sometimes it reaches its end.
I know, it sags at 10 o'clock at night, huh?
It's only 9:15, but it is sagging.
The feeling that you, that you're not yourself. Like, I'm on the, like, in meditation, sometimes, just in everyday life, I feel like I'm with myself, that I am myself. And then that when agitation arises, you know, like I feel the separation from myself and that agitation.
Yeah, because that can be, you can have like a pushing away of the agitation. It's that agitation builds on itself. But sometimes if you just sit back with the agitation and just relax and allow the agitation to be there and just sit with it. Don't push it away at all. Just welcome it. Just let it be there. And then you'll find after a while it starts working itself out and dissipating. Because you're not messing with it. You're just accepting it. Not hating it. Not giving it any bad vibes. But just welcoming it. You know. And then just be with it. See what happens. Even if you're with it, let it be with it for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Just see. Just be patient. And that changes things. To just accept what's going on in your mind and not push it away at all, let it work itself out. You know? And just be present to it, be interested, be welcoming.
What you resist persists. What you resist persists.
Yes, it does. And when you don't resist it, it dissipates.
So it's
almost invariably, it dissipates. It's a beautiful thing to learn.
So it's accept that agitation?
Mm-hmm. Just welcome it and let it be and just sit with it. Like you were holding a screaming child, for instance.
But don't try to fix it, though, because trying to fix it is still...
Then you're messing with it. Just relax. Even with a little baby, when they're crying and crying, you just hold them and, you know, give them that love.